It's time for Mac Break Weekly. Renee's here. Andy's here. The HomePod is here. I will later in the show attempt to rip this cord from the back of the HomePod. Mirth and hilarity will ensue, but now I don't know if it's back in right. And we'll give you our review of the HomePod and a whole lot more. Coming up next on Mac Break Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Mac Break Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 597, recorded Tuesday, February 13th, 2018. Feel the burn. Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by ZipRecruiter. Looking for your next great hire? ZipRecruiter offers simple tools and powerful matching technology to find you qualified candidates efficiently and effectively. It's the smartest way to hire. Try it free at ZipRecruiter.com/MacBreak. And by Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully so you can be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. Get started at rocketmortgage.com/MacBreak. It's time for Mac Break Weekly, the show where we cover the latest news from Apple with Renee HomePod Richie from iMore.com in his home pod.
I am. Yes. I'm potted in my home, Leo, right now. I'm just potting in.
I see your white home pod over your right shoulder. That's nice.
Yes. Yeah, I got a white one. Dalrymple got a black one. I don't know how they decided that.
I got a black one. Well, I bought it. That's how I decided.
Okay. You're master money of your own destiny.
I gave them $350 and I said, here, give me the black one. Also here with Andy Anaka from the Chicago Sun-Times. Hello, Andrew.
Heidi-ho.
Heidi-ho. Good to see you. Yeah, I've been listening to the HomePod. So I've been, you know, it's one of those things where it's hard to read all the reviews and understand what you're going to get here. You almost have to go listen.
Did you see the Reddit one, Leo? Did you see the Reddit audio file?
I did, and that's one I would point to. It's in the audio file subreddit. I saw that.
Isn't it amazing that Reddit is now doing better work than Consumer Reports?
Well, I'll be honest. I'm not sure they're doing better work yet. By the way, the reason you said that is because Consumer Reports said it wasn't as good as the Google Home Max.
Well, they said they were going to take a while and have to test it. And like this guy just did it. Like he went home, he set up like all this crazy nerd equipment, and he just ran his tests. And it's like we're moving from old world media to new world media.
Okay. But he did his tests in his own room, and you know it wasn't. So you gotta understand what you're getting. He says, I am speechless. The HomePod actually sounds better than the KEF X300A. Now, the KEF, which is a very nice speaker, is roughly the same size as the HomePod.
Yeah.
And his measurements didn't measure anything subjective like stereo speakers versus a single speaker. So I'm guessing if you set somebody down in front of two KEFs with the HomePod in the middle, they're going to prefer the KEFs just because they're left and right.
He has this really good takeaway that he put both in this post and in the later one that he wrote. And that's like he's saying, if you are an audiophile and you sit there and you get a really good sound system and you set it up and you measure the room and you make it like your room is well done and you do everything, it's going to sound way better. But if you just want to drop something into your kitchen or your living room and it's not set up and it's got weird layouts and weird, this will sound as good as is possible with you doing zero effort at all.
Yeah. He tested it in an untreated room. Yeah. As far as I can tell, tested it properly. But I think really the thing that I would say to somebody considering it is the simple caveat for what it is. They never add that. Or it sounds great for a speaker its size, that kind of thing. I think it's
if
as
you
good
have
as
Apple Music.
Yes. If you and the other constraints are you have to have an iPhone or an iPod, iPad. You have to listen to Apple Music pretty much exclusively. It's not a Bluetooth speaker. You can't really use it as a phone speaker, although we were able to get the phone audio out of it via AirPlay. It doesn't have the microphone channel.
It can't, when you do the phone, so it doesn't have baseband, so it can't work as its own phone. But if you have a phone call, it'll show up just like AirPods will or speakerphone will in the phone.
But it doesn't use the mic on the HomePod, so it's not really a speakerphone.
Yeah.
You still have to talk into the phone, and there's a latency. Well, there's a delay, and that's one of the things.
And also, Google Home doesn't have baseband or radios, the GSM radios, the Amazon product doesn't.
Bluetooth.
But they let you connect through at least a desktop app, so that I can at least do I can at least do a voice call that's not through phone lines.
But that's software. I want to reserve judgment in terms of the pure numbers until stereo review or. You know, sound and vision.
Yeah,
or,
but is that really useful?
It's totally subjective. But that's the point: is this guy's measurements are also totally objective. They're not. They don't include the.
Yeah, but that's it's. I'm always a little bit not suspicious, but I put them at sort of a lower rate. They could be done very scientifically by people with superb credentials, but if it's not a difference that you can hear, it's useless. Or if it's not a difference that applies to the music that you like to listen to, it's useless. And even if the HomePod is an inch and a half too tall to be on the shelf where you really want it to be. That's also a factor.
Right.
I don't have one for long-term testing yet, but I have had experience with it, of course, in the last week, and I found that the thing there's a lot that I loved about it, and I'm gonna be putting off my real review until I get one in the house for like at least 2 or 3 weeks. But the things that disappointed me were things like software and things like being able to ask for a certain artist and for Siri to absolutely understand what artist I was talking about or what genre I was talking about. So the audio quality is subjective, but overwhelmingly positive reviews. It's the software side of things that make me wonder if I have the $120 smart speaker that's smarter but a worse speaker, would I rather talk to that thing and just simply be listening to my David Bowie quickly as opposed to playing 20 questions? Like, okay, Shlomo, I'm thinking of an artist. He's a male artist in the 70s. Glam? Yes. would this artist be noted for his work in the theater? He did appear in some movies and one stage performance. Is it Gary Glitter? No, it's not Gary Glitter. Stop.
Let me interrupt you just a sec so we can get other people.
I'm just saying.
I would do the opposite, which is I think it's accepted. Everybody agrees. Siri's mediocre. It has very severe limitations because it's an Apple-only device. But Apple's not selling it that way. They're selling it as a speaker. So I think the only really thing to talk about is how good a speaker it is. And I guess I would agree with everybody. It's good for what it is. I mean, Apple's done a very, very good job. They have Tomlinson Holman, the creator of THX, is among their many, many great engineers on their team. This is the flat response curve. It's very flat, although that's not what you're going to hear because it has a loudness curve applied to it, which you want. I don't know. Renee, would you agree that, given that you've had it for a while, that this is... I think it's a great speaker for people who want music as wallpaper, as part of their life. It is not a great speaker for people who want to listen to music.
I think, the way I put it in my not a review is that if you are all in on the Apple ecosystem and you have Apple Music and you just want to be able to take a speaker and drop it anywhere and it'll sound really good no matter where you drop it, then this is the speaker for you. If there's a room that doesn't have audio and you don't want to futz with it, if you want to move a speaker from room to room, if you want to do any of those things, if you value quality through ease of use, then this is a really good speaker.
Apple's kind of pushing the notion and I bought into it initially until I got one, that because of computational audio, this speaker ends, it's the new way of being. Now, admittedly, you can't pair it, so it's not stereo. But there are
audiophiles losing their stuff over what's happening with the speaker. I can't understand that at all, but I've read several audiophiles now. Like, I can't believe they're doing this, or they're modulating this, or they're able to reflect that. So there's some science here that's really interesting.
They're doing smart things, yeah.
Yes, that we'll see propagate across the industry, I hope.
The loudness curve means it's subjectively sounds good, but it's not objectively perfect.
Yeah.
The fact they're able to get a great bass at a very high level because they're preventing distortion. They're actually limiting how loud it can get. And this is an interesting thing in the measurement. He was able to see the speaker. He says such tight control on bass from within a speaker is unheard of in the audio industry. But that's because you have an A8 processor in here.
Yeah.
So they're eliminating harmonic distortion from overdriving the woofer. It's impressive. Yes.
My new favorite word.
Yeah, I love the Fletcher Munson curve. But I actually like how that sounds. But that is a modification, you know, of the sound to. And some of this is, well, how's it mixed? Is it mixed for that? Or, you know, how did the engineer in the studio mix it, et cetera, et cetera? I guess I don't want people to think that this is the greatest speaker ever made.
It's a beginning. Yeah, it is nowhere near.
I think that this is a product that's tailor-made for Apple's really good two-week return policy. And this isn't because it's not because it's potentially a bad product. It's just that it's going to be I can't think of any other Apple product that has been so highly subjective. It's not just for the sound quality, but also there are some people that can appreciate a $1,000 phone. There are some people that they will never be able to get the full $1,000 worth of usage out of a $1,000 phone. A $650 phone is just fine for them, and they will never notice any difference between the cheaper one and the more expensive one. So that's what I'm talking about when I say that it's a really, really good one to buy under Apple's two-week return policy, because at the end of a week and a half, you'll either get a sense that I never want this out of my living room ever again, or out of my kitchen ever again, or out of my bedroom ever again. Or you'll say, wow, that really does sound great, but, you know, it's not doing more for me than my old smart speaker or my $200 Bluetooth speaker that I bought a couple of years ago. And that's fine. So that's what people are going to have to decide for themselves.
There are small speakers that some say sound better. In fact, as you point out, Renee, the Consumer Reports, in their preliminary testing said it's maybe edged out a little bit by the most direct competition, which is the Sonos
Only
One.
Only people
with
I've ever heard that say, like, and we've had like Neely Patel listen to it, Jim Dalrymple, I've listened to it, Serenity listened to it, Reddit listened. I mean, there's so many people, and they, like, not that it's the world's most fantastic speaker, but just that the Google Max is very bassy and very unidirectional. And it sounds like Consumer Reports was sort of not just dropping them in a room to test them, but putting them in very specific. Well, we'll see. I mean, well, I'm not a big fan of Consumer Reports anymore. Not because of Apple. I think their Microsoft and their Samsung reviews are terrible too. But I'm eager to see more people now when they get their hands on them. And the thing I like is that I think it's solid hardware. And yeah, Siri is ridiculous. Like Clayton Morris, you know, friend of the show, Clayton Morris, he sent me a thing saying, I can't get it to play the Beatles One album. And I asked for it and it played immediately. And we exchanged voice messages. And his request, like he sent me, cued my Siri to play it properly. And my request cued his to play it properly. But when he asked, it wouldn't play. And that's the sort of thing.
When I asked it for the first time, I asked it for classical music, it played hip hop.
Yeah.
It was old school hip hop, but it was not what I was thinking.
Well, Leo, that's so, because we're getting old.
clearly, it's influenced by your Apple Music choices. But that's a good thing, right? It's individualized.
I got the Super Mario soundtrack because my godkids have been asking Apple Music so much for it. So I turned that off. You can go into Siri and say turn off music influence, and then that doesn't happen anymore.
Yeah, I really that is a worry to me, that it pays off your long-term investment in Apple Music. So if you've been feeding information about your personal taste and the stuff that you tend to ask for, if you give it an oddball request of something that, wow, he has never, ever asked for Tahitian funk electro dance EDM before, I'm guessing that I misheard him. I'll try to find I'll use the second or third most likely match for what he asked for. It's a good payoff for people who have been in the system for a long time, but it's kind of a bummer that it can't do that kind of smarts independently of the user, that people who are just signing up for Apple Music after canceling their subscription 2 years ago are going to rush into these problems, and they're going to feel more angry about having to use Apple Music if it's not even working correctly for them.
It has eight amplifiers, which is very interesting. Each speaker has its own amp, which is the right way to do it, but no one does that in a speaker this size. That's insane.
Yeah, it's amazing.
It's engineeringly interesting.
Yeah, very interesting.
The iFixit teardown on this, which I'm sure we'll get to, is just – I'm just so much even more impressed by how this thing is made, by how well – for something that is not meant to be taken apart by anybody ever, for something that costs $280 to fix or replace by Apple service – man, is this thing a beautiful thing in, on the inside.
They some would dispute that they maybe were more aggressive in tearing it down than they needed to be. For instance, they took a X-Acto knife to the fabric, and somebody said, "Oh, you don't have to do that."
They took a hacksaw. I saw the video, and they seemed to be undoing a drawstring. And there was another video by the what's inside this YouTube channel that just cuts things in half. Okay, that's weird because I'll have to check the video. I think another video found the drawstring.
What I'm saying is that they may have been a little more aggressive in tearing it apart than they needed to be. However, they did give it a 1 out of 10 for repairability. And I think given that they had to take a hacksaw to it at one point, that may be accurate.
The video I saw, which I remember being iFixed, I'll have to double check it. They had to use heat guns to undo glue to get at the place where you actually get to the screws. There was a point in which they could not figure out how to separate the top of the shell from the bottom of the shell. And so finally, in frustration, they did hacksaw it. But they also found evidence inside that they thought meant that it was meant to be unscrewed, but then they might have decided to use glue instead.
Right. In any event, you're not going to take it apart. The cost of repairing it, if you bring it to Apple, is 80% of the total cost. I think it's $280. So don't break it. Don't drop it. Don't touch it. If you have a white one, really don't touch it, especially with those hot sauce fingers. And the other one that I thought was interesting is the dispute over whether this cable is removable. It looks like it's normaled into the back of the device. It doesn't look like it has a plug, but a couple of people, including 9to5Mac, took their HomePod in their own hands and yanked it out. In fact, there is a connector. It's just very tightly attached. I wouldn't recommend doing that because at some point you're going to yank the wire out of the connector.
Yeah.
I
imagine it has to do with shielding. Otherwise, that's the most natural thing in the world to make that detachable. There you go. You broke the speaker and the microphone. Are you happy now?
It came out with some effort, and I hit the microphone and knocked it down, but it did come out. So there you go. It does come out.
And now for your next trick, get it back in.
Are you okay, Leo?
It works.
Yeah, I am. It's so hard to pull it out that my hand. Yeah.
Medic.
But it does come out. I'll verify that. I wouldn't recommend it, given how hard I had to pull that.
So in order to get it back in, Serenity had to use the edge of a table to push
it
hard enough
to get
it back in.
It doesn't go right back in.
Yeah.
Oh, well. this makes, at this Siri, point, Siri without the taps. Wire, a wonderful football. Don't break this, by the way, because it's so
expensive.
I'll
give you $30 for it, Leo. I got a soldering iron.
Look what they did. Look at the iFixit, folks. They had to really destroy it, it looks like.
That mesh makes a wonderful giant kiwi.
but it is, there's a lot of technology in here. It's really very impressive. And there's nobody would say it doesn't sound great. It sounds great.
Exactly.
I'm not saying it doesn't sound great. It sounds great. Does it sound better than anything else you can get in that size and price point? I don't know. I haven't heard every speaker in that size and price point.
I can tell you this,
it doesn't sound as good as my home stereo. So I put it in the middle of my home stereo, and I listen to a variety of music, and my home stereo is more spacious, more detail, clearer, crisper. It's like tasting wine, I understand.
Yeah.
To my taste, I think that's why I say it's for people who want to have music in their environment, not people who want to listen to music.
Yeah. I mean, both you and Renee together have made really good points there that I've had some experience with it. I have nothing that amounts to having it in my home day after day after day, hour after hour. I did notice with a couple of pieces of music that I usually test audio with because I'm so familiar with how these tracks work. I didn't notice as many details as with my home stereo system, but remember, with the home stereo system, I have to be sitting at a certain point between the speakers. I have no doubt that would sound better if I were just anywhere in the house, anywhere in the living room, as opposed to sitting. Actually, to get maximum listening, I actually have to move a chair to get the really in that sweet spot where I really do appreciate the entire sound field. So just like Renee said, and just like you're saying, It's not necessarily for someone who would be spending even $500 on a stereo and a pair of speakers. It's a really great choice for people who are okay with whatever single sound source they've got, but they want it to sound amazing no matter where you are inside the house, so or in the room. So,
and you know what's really good for voice sounds as good on it as anything, you know, as anything I've tried to play voice on. So if you're listening to audiobooks. Or if you're listening, in fact, what you'll hear is more defects in some of the audiobook recordings. If you're listening to podcasts, ours have no defects.
I listened to MacBreak Weekly. It sounded phenomenal.
It's great for that.
It was super crisp and clear. Yeah.
It's great for that. And you know what? To me, the best thing about all of these voice-enabled speakers is it's the best thing that ever happened to podcasts. It makes it so easy, not just ours, but to anybody's, to listen to podcasts.
I think we've talked about this, but I used to listen to podcasts on my Apple TV. I found that if the podcast is coming out of my computer, then it's distracting. I can't work while it's on. But if it's just ambiently in the room, then it doesn't really bother me. So I used to do the Apple TV, but then it was coming from like the sound bar and the surround system. And now it just comes from the HomePod. And it's enough that I can listen when I want to, but it's never like smashing voice into my face.
So let me ask, but by the way, don't use this as computer speakers. There is some built-in latency. Intentionally, apparently, because of AirPlay. You mentioned trying to use it with your Apple TV as a home theater speaker. Again, latency is going to kill you. The lip sync.
I haven't noticed any latency with that. So I've said this, but my mom has a Samsung cable box, and we plug it into her Samsung television, and the voice is never in sync, and I have not been able to fix it. This, I just choose the AirPlay target. And it handles everything, and the voices are perfectly in sync, and I don't have to worry about it, and it stays stuck there until I do something else. And as far as I know, Apple's AirPlay team, Apple TV team, and HomePod team work their butts off to make that so.
So AirPlay has some known latency, and when we tested it, it was maybe half a second or a second. But you know, remember that a lot of receivers do compensation knowing that there's going to be some latency, so.
When Apple controls a whole widget, like with Apple TV and the HomePod, they can make sure that they match up.
I don't think it's ideal for that, frankly. I think, you know, get a home theater in a box. There's a lot, get a sound. There are a lot of ways to do this that are probably better. But if you want to have a speaker.
If it's all you have, though. Yeah.
Well, if it's all you have. If you want to have a speaker in your apartment or your, you know, if you have a studio or you have a kitchen and you want it to sound good no matter where you are in that environment, this is probably the best choice for you. And $350, while it sounds expensive, is actually not expensive for this, I don't think, for what you get.
And one of the things I always wanted to do, like I sit there looking at stuff on my iPad, and the iPad speakers have gotten really good, but they didn't used to be good at all. And I always wanted to AirPlay to the Sonos speaker behind my bed. And I would just sit there and watch the thing, and they just never provided AirPlay. And now I did this with the HomePod. I just moved the audio there, and I sat there, and I finally had what I really wanted. Yeah. Watching on my iPad, listening to the music on a better speaker.
Yeah. Yeah. Having said all of that, and this is our second week covering it, but I've had it now for a few days, so I want to get my two cents in. The real question I have is, what are Apple's intentions? What are your intentions, Apple? What do you, and you had the briefing with them. I know they didn't address this at all. But will they make larger ones? Will they incorporate this technology into other stuff?
So the team that worked on this, they work on a range of products. So they worked on the iPads speakers, on the iPad Pro. They worked on the AirPods. They have a bunch of little teams that do projects like this. I think this is them testing the waters. And as we've seen now, we have a variety of iPhones on the market. We have a variety of iPads on the market. We had a variety of iPods on the market. And I don't know what they'll do next. I would love a home theater bar with this technology, for example. Like there's the name Apple, Home Camel Case Theater or Home Camel Case Bar, either one of those. And there's a lot of other things I'd love, like a mini maybe for people who really want a small, like for a child, a kid's room or a dorm room or something. They don't need the big one. So I think there's a lot of room to scale this technology. The advances I really want, though, are all software-based. It's just stuff like adding SiriKit for audio so that you can choose to listen to Spotify instead of Apple Music.
Yeah.
And making Apple – like I'll say – how much does HomePod cost? And it'll say cost $350. How much does AirPlay do AirPods cost? I don't know. You have to ask Apple. So it's just like sort of making things consistent, I think, is the biggest thing they could do to improve HomePod experience right now.
Yeah. I really think that even just finding a way to make something that's as good as this for $100 less in a year or two, is going to really change the game, because I think that will put it into what the hell, why not mode. And it will also mean that people might want be eager to buy two of these or put them throughout the house. The question is that whether they've got a vector for this that's similar to the Apple Watch or where the Apple Watch or the iPhone, where they know that, well, we don't have everything that's on. We haven't implemented everything we put on the whiteboard yet, but that's coming as soon as we spend some more time on it and see how people use it. Or whether it's on more of an Apple TV vector where this exists to help justify our iTunes store. It's going to be okay, decent hardware. It's not going to be exciting. We're going to make sure it maintains pace with whatever else is out there, but we're not terribly excited about it. So if they go an Apple TV route, okay, it'll still be a nice speaker. But if they find a way to make a $300 version of this, if they find a way to make three or four of these work together in ways as yet unimagined, then, oh boy, we'd like to see it. But first, please make Siri smarter.
So we're going to take a break. When we come back, there's still lots of other things to talk about, including the biggest leak in Apple history.
It's like a leak, like an onion leak, Leo?
A giant leak. Makes me want to make soup for some reason, or a casserole. Yeah. They must cook with leeks in Montreal a lot, right? It's a very French thing to do.
Oh, absolutely.
And I love leeks. Leeks. Fantastic. This is not that kind of
thing. I'm hungry for leaks now.
Our show today brought to you by ZipRecruiter. If you're in the business of hiring, you know, congratulations. You have the most important job in the company. You didn't know that, did you? Actually, you knew that. The boss doesn't know that, unless you're the boss. The person who hires the company is really building the company, human piece by piece. A company is just that, made of people. The best people can bring your company to the moon, or Mars in the case of Elon Musk. The worst people can bring your company to its knees, as in the case of, I don't know, Uber. It's a really, really important job is all I'm saying. And I've got a way to do your job better. Something better than just, you know, posting it online and praying for the right people to see it. ZipRecruiter, a platform that finds the right job candidates for you. ZipRecruiter, you post on ZipRecruiter. We always mention this before, and it goes to 100-plus job sites. But I think the underlying technology is even more interesting. ZipRecruiter learns what you're looking for, identifies people with the right experience, and then invites them to apply for your job. Getting the right person has always been an issue of getting to where the people are and letting them know you have a job and saying, come, apply to the job. These invitations have revolutionized how you're going to find your next hire. 80% of employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a great quality candidate through ZipRecruiter in one day. Imagine, you know, you find out somebody's leaving today and tomorrow you've got their replacement. ZipRecruiter doesn't stop there. They even spotlight the strongest applications you receive, so you never miss a great match. The perfect person's out there. ZipRecruiter helps you find them. It's designed to do it. Businesses of all size trust ZipRecruiter. In fact, some of the biggest companies in the world and some of the smallest like ours. Right now, you can try ZipRecruiter free at ZipRecruiter.com/MacBreak. ZipRecruiter.com/MacBreak. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire at ZipRecruiter.com/MacBreak. Try it free right now. Make your job easier, your life easier, and do it better with ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter.com/MacBreak. We thank him so much for making MacBreak Weekly possible. The iPhone source code, iBoot, it's called the iBoot source code.
That's not Canadian. Don't make any jokes.
iBoot. Jonathan Levin, who has written a series of books on iOS and macOS 10 internals, told Motherboard's Lorenzo Franceschi Bicchieri that it is the worst leak in Apple history because... Now, Apple's response is, hey, look at it's old. This is from 2014. But this is important because iBoot is how iOS starts. Mm-hmm. And if you have the source code, you can look for ways to jailbreak a phone, to hack a phone, maybe even to get into the secure enclave. Is that correct?
I don't know about the secure enclave specifically, but yeah, everyone from jailbreakers to security researchers to people who are potentially interested in finding exploits for less notable reasons could look through this and potentially find a bug. There's no telling if that bug has already been fixed because this is iBoot from iOS 9, which is two versions ago. So there's no guaranteeing that that target is still in the same place. But it is not good that this got out. It is so. I'm not a big believer in security through obscurity. I think that Apple, and I think Apple would echo this, that their code has to be bulletproof whether somebody knows what it is or not. But in adding a layer of obscurity is just one more thing to go through.
Levin knew it was the real deal when it was posted on GitHub because he'd already disassembled the iBoot code so he could compare his disassembly. He says it may bring back jailbreaking because jailbreaking has been thwarted by Apple's fixes in the past, but now there'll be new ways to look.
And most jailbreaks now are multi-factor. Like, it's not just, oh, here go, there's a TIFF and you'll jailbreak your iPhone like in the glory days of the first iPhone. Now, like, you really need an exploit here, an exploit there, chain these things together, get access to this. And it's an ongoing rolling process, and who knows. This is not anything that anyone with an iPhone today has to worry about. It's not like this code was put up and tomorrow someone's hacking into your iPhone. It's very much just a big information dump right now. But the positive side of this, if there is one, it's the same thing when the obscurity layer was pulled off of the secure enclave. It's that researchers can get in as well. And Apple has a bug bounty program and people can find things in there and report them. And that makes the code better for everybody. So I'm always of two minds, these things. Probably better if they never leak, but once they are leaked, at least we have a chance at better security.
Yeah, this was apparently a low-level employee. I don't know why he had access to it, who shared it with his friends, and then his friends posted it. It ended up being posted on GitHub, where Apple immediately filed a takedown request, and it's don't go looking for it. It's gone. Although I imagine people saved it. I think it's fun to look at source code. I think that's fascinating, frankly.
Totally. And I don't want to say that Apple is naive, but I mean, they are very open and embracing. And I remember the person who went to Apple as an intern and was asked to port the OS X code to ARM processors published it as his university paper.
Right.
And that's how all that got out.
Right.
And it's not that, like, I'm sure Apple secrecy is like, gosh, when someone shows up there and they're like, there's something cool for you to work on, they're often not sort of mean or malicious about who gets access to what.
Security,
maybe that'll change if this kind of stuff comes
out. It's always been said security is layers, right? There's layers of security, and more layers is better. One of those layers can be security through obscurity. You certainly don't want to say, hey, look at our code in general. But it's not the end of the world if it gets out. Apple did encrypt this code, right? I mean, it's not something you can easily get to. So it's for iOS 9.
It's a great headline.
And so Apple says, we don't care. It's iOS 9. Although I've seen debate among hackers about how often iBoot's source code would be changed because it's so critical to it. You know, if it's working and it's reliable, you may not want to change it too much anyway.
Yeah, and it's interesting how it got out. I mean, it was an intern who then shared it with five friends who were in the jailbreak scene and were really curious about it. Yeah, and then they decided they were going to keep it and not share it with anybody. But then as the years went by, they'd be, oh, I'll just share it with this person and that person. And then the quote was, we shared it with somebody we shouldn't have. And then
that's
that
interesting.
Person tried to leak it on Reddit.
But why did an intern have access to, if this is the family jewels, why did the intern have access to it?
And again, I mean, it sounds like it's naive, but there's often somebody who's given a project to work on, and this is part of what they're called, or they figured out how to get access to it outside their project.
Right. A lot of times, I was talking on iOS today about why people don't like source code to leak. Of course, there's a security issue, but a lot of times it's just embarrassing, the comments or there's some little crappy go-to somewhere that you just don't want anybody to see because you just
There was a great story from Don Melton because he was put in charge of cleaning up the Netscape source code before on open source in Mozilla, and he got that job because he knew the most curse words and they were using those as line breaks.
I love it. There's a third reason, of course, proprietary code, but iBoot probably has no proprietary code owned by others or whatever. I wouldn't guess. 1 in 10 notebooks shipped worldwide last year was a MacBook. That's not bad. 10%. This is according to TrendForce. Apple surpassed Asus to become the world's fourth largest notebook vendor, 9.6% market share. That's where that 1 in 10 comes from.
Flirting with double digits.
Oh, boy. HP's number one. Actually, HP's really been dominant for the last few years. Followed by Lenovo, also number two for 3 years running. Dell, Asus, which is now flip-flopped with Apple. Apple has taken over as the number four manufacturer.
And it's always different. Like, this is all laptops. When you look at the premium market, then it's a different number set for Apple.
Apple's happy with the sales.
Fewer computers and more money. And not more computers and less money.
Yeah, Apple's perfectly content being number four.
They're not poor.
They're number one in money, and that's what matters, kids. That's how you score this game.
I think Andy's muted.
Oh. Thanks for waving at us, Andy. I'm sorry.
Well, I've been...
Did you have anything to say, Andy?
I'm not. My microphone isn't muted.
Oh, it was muted. Carson muted it, but okay. Maybe you didn't try to say anything.
Okay. Well, no, I was starting to feel a little bit hurt.
Oh no! It was an accident.
I know.
Carson, you should apologize to Andy. Now just shake his hand.
Why did he get a timeout?
I'm sorry, Andy.
That's fine. Now, if you two want to go off and get coffee, I've prepared a list of all the comments that I was going to make, and many of them were really smart.
All yours. I give you the talking stick.
The only thing that was the only big thing to talk about in the leak story was that I was talking to a couple of developers who were saying, they don't just shake the Etch-a-Sketch and start all over again when they go to iOS 10. There are going to be elements of code that they're going to reuse from time to time. They were also saying that one of them was also saying, who does a lot of forensics, was saying that oftentimes looking at the raw, not the disassembled source code, but actually from the source code, it gives them a lot of insights into how this team thinks and what their priorities are. And every piece of information you can get about a target is always going to be useful. So if you're thinking about in the future, if you're trying to get into somebody's phone for forensics or because you work for the government, and you have four different options of how the developers of this code do that, it will probably narrow you down to one or two if you've seen their original source code from a previous project, because you know that they probably wouldn't do it that way. They would probably do it this way. So I think it's more interesting from an educational point of view for people to see here's what this code looks like and here's how it gets put together. But it's not insignificant. And if anything, it will mean that those Apple employees that you typically don't see, the ones that have the black polo shirts, are probably knocking on some doors figuratively and literally, and some people are having a bad day.
By the way, Mac, I didn't realize, I wish I'd seen this before I tried to pull out that cable. Apple will repair home power cables for $29, but warns they should not be removed. Oh, never mind. The HomePod includes a built-in power cable, says Apple, that should not be removed. In the rare instance the cable is detached or damaged, do not attempt to remove or plug it back into the HomePod. Which I just did. If the cable is removed or impaired, damage could have occurred to the cable or the internal components of the HomePod. Wow. Gosh, I wish I'd seen this before tore it out.
So that's not the typical unplug it to put into storage or to move it someplace else. Instead of ripping out the circuit board, it will detach at an easily repairable point sort of plug. If it falls off the...
It's gone back in a little bit at an angle. I'm a little worried now that maybe I hope I haven't heard it. It's on, but... Sorry, HomePod.
Traveling through outer space.
This is the... Sometimes I wonder why it plays what it plays.
You know, I'm actually impressed with how good it sounds on video and on streaming.
Right.
It shouldn't.
Right.
It's reading your room through the Skype connection, and then it's modulating the audio.
That's the Thurman Munson loudness calibration, I think.
Is it doing something like what Samsung and VW does when it knows that there's a microphone present and it's being tested? It goes into a special optimized for this microphone mode.
Right. I would
turn. It turns off at auto land.
I'm sorry, I cracked myself up. Let's talk about iOS 12. Ooh. It's coming in the fall. We've mentioned before that Apple has decided not to make it a big feature update and focus more on rooting out bugs. But we are starting to see some tips. For instance, Animoji in more places, right?
Kids are lining up for that, Leo.
In FaceTime. Yeah. Everybody wants Animoji in FaceTime. I had that. I'm pretty sure I had that with one of my first Logitech cameras. Had some software that would make my face a doggy.
But it's just for when Harry McCracken calls.
Whatever is new is old again. Deeper Siri integration into the iPhone search view. Do not disturb improvements. Will give you more options to automatically reject phone calls or silence notifications. Redesigned version of its, well, this is much demanded, Stocks app. And a multiplayer mode for augmented reality games. This is Mark Gurman coming up, of course, with all of this stuff.
Definitely lording the chest. I'm wondering if they're going to do something, if they're going to make an emoji as a service, to use a buzzword. After finding out how many people were just using it as just to do lip sync videos, I know that's something that's available to third-party developers already, but to make it easier to essentially make that a mode of the FaceTime camera, to make that a mode of the standard camera app, I think that would be something that would be wonderfully silly, wonderfully stupid, and a good project to put someone on if you don't trust them with the boot code, source code.
Yeah. Take this, intern.
Internally codenamed Peace. It will likely be called iOS 12.
Ski resort.
I don't know why it wouldn't be called iOS 12.
There could be some nice little surprises there. Historically, Apple always has they always have that list of things in the back of the drawer that they didn't get to the last time because there was something huge that they had to push that was going to be killing the entire project if they did not get, you know, facial recognition working. And so this is the time where they go to the back of the drawer, which is a term that I've heard once or twice before, and they say, well, remember how we thought that we could increase the performance of this if we just had a few weeks in which we could tear apart this code and rebuild it, but we've never had that time. OS 12 could be one of the more interesting releases in a long time.
And as often is the case, you've got to read with a fine-tooth comb when you got Gurman, because he's got lots of tidbits. For instance, the animated emojis will also come to the iPad. The company is working on a new model that will have the required Face ID camera. Is that new news? I don't think I'd read that before.
No. Well, I mean, it's like Touch ID came to
We thought it would.
iPad, yep. So
Yeah, but where do you put the notch on the iPad?
mean, oh, you got enough. You got nothing but bezels there.
Nothing but bezels.
The question is, can they source enough of those cameras to serve the iPad market? It is much smaller than the iPhone market, but we'll figure it out.
Do you guys agree that iOS 11 is buggy? I hear people say this all the time. It seems very stable to me of late.
But it is better for me than iOS 7, iOS 8, and iOS 10. No, iOS not. iOS 7 and 8, absolutely better than iOS 7 or 8. I don't know if it's better than iOS 10. I don't remember. The thing that's hard about this is every time this bug story comes up, and it comes up every year, I go back and I look at my Twitter feed and I look at the iMore forums and the Mac Rumor forums and the Apple discussion groups, and I try to get a sense of how upset we were with the previous year's bugs. And with humans, you have this thing where past pain, we forget it really quickly because otherwise we would never do anything again. But stuff that's bothering us now is the absolute most like a fly around our head right now is the absolute worst thing in the world. Doesn't matter if you broke your leg 3 years ago, that fly is just destroying your life. And we're like, because Twitter and social are such instant feedback now. I don't know if you saw it, Leo, but there was this brilliant thread by Steven Sinofsky on Twitter yesterday.
People
it was
are
like
talking
a 32-part
yeah.
tweet story. It was amazing because he is one of the few people who was responsible for shipping software at scale. If people aren't familiar with the heated office,
much
Windows.
Hated Windows 8.
Yeah, he also did SkyDrive. He did Outlook.com. So he has experience shipping software and services at a massive scale. And that tweet storm, bless him, it was super long. And Jason Snell pointed out only he could really write it. And I'm glad he did. But he sort of laid out what it takes for a company to ship software at scale, and going all the way back to incorporating Next and then rolling out the iPhone and updating them every 12 to 18 months over and over again and adding new devices. And he said it's absolutely unprecedented in the history of modern technology. And while we think there's a lot of bugs now, like he heard the same thing at Windows, and every metric they said, you know, our crashes are down, this is all down. And he's sure that Apple has really good numbers on this stuff, but this is what happens when you scale. And he sort of defines the problem space of scaling a company really, really well. And he was responding to the other part of Mark's news, which is that Apple is going to be emphasizing sort of these fixes. And they have this entire culture that has grown around radars. You have someone files a bug, it gets assigned a ranking from P1, P2, P3 to P4. P1 is a showstopper that absolutely has to be fixed. P2 P2s are major bugs, and maybe the P3s or P4s, nobody has time for it. And everything gets assigned a radar, and everyone is driven to fix those. And if you hate, like you're an artist, you're a craftsman, you want to fix this bug, but it's not assigned a high enough priority, and you don't get to fix it. And over the last few years, they've been changing that. Famously, last year, Craig Federighi said that they were allowing the teams and the individual contributors, that's what a single engineer is called at Apple, to sort of have some time to fix the things that really bug them or work on the features that they really like. And that's continuing to roll now. So I think sort of what the survival mode they went into to ship iPhone and ship iPad and ship Apple Watch and get all this stuff out and get it all working together is sort of that cycle is ending. And we're getting into a cycle now where we'll keep adding features, but these are mature products. And it really behooves us now to spend time smoothing them out as much as possible.
He actually compares the iPhone iOS development cycle. He said to the IBM System 360. He said Apple's done kind of an amazing thing, which is release every 12 to 18 months for the entire, he says 20 years, but I think, is he talking about? Since Next. Okay.
Yeah.
He says, well, some were larger and smaller, that there wasn't much comparable anywhere, and certainly nothing without some big gaps. There were some massive architectural bets playing out over years. Apple was disrupting the PC market with a unique point of view, but no one knew. He talks about the nuance between features, schedule, and quality. He says, you can't have all three. You try to have all of them, but in practice, you know, you're going to have to pick, you know, one or two. Yeah, be pragmatic. This is really good. I wish he hadn't put it on Twitter. It seems like
29, 16. Number 16 is good too.
Number 16? Okay. When you look at a feature like Face ID and trace it backward all the way to keychain, see how much long-term thought can go into a feature and how much good work can go unnoticed or even fail for years before it was worth surfacing as a big advantage. That's long-term POV and focus. Yeah, we do know that about Apple. Apple often releases that just sits there. And you go, well, you know.
Like Passbook. Remember Passbook? Passbook is Apple Pay Cash now, but looking at Passbook, you're like, oh, this is useless.
Right. For a long time, but it's a piece to a larger puzzle.
Yeah. Even QuickTime, if you remember the first demos of it, all they can show was, hey, look, there's a picture. There's a Microsoft Word document with a video of an Apollo rocket launching. And even I didn't really get it at the beginning. But until I was talking to engineers months later about what they were putting into it and what they were building around it. And even then, it took me 3 or 4 years to figure out that, nope, QuickTime is really going to be everything about delivering content on the Mac. If there is a Mac in the next 2 years, it's going to be the root of pretty much everything. It's a pretty big deal that how big Apple rolled the dice on OS X back before it was even Mac OS X. And now it's still not just the root of every Mac out there, but it's also the root of every iPhone and the root of every iPad out there. So this was something that really, it was a roll of the dice, yes, but I can't think of another gamble that paid off better or bigger than that.
Sanofsky says, I can say in any absolute sense, Apple has exceeded anyone else. But he points out something, and this is kind of germane to the recent conversation about Snapchat. People are rebelling against the new Snapchat. And he says, the more a product is used, the more hypersensitive people get to how it works. The human brain is extraordinary in how it recognizes even the slightest changes in responsiveness, performance, and sequencing of operations. He says, it comes from our primordial instinct for survival, the ability to spot a tiger in the grass. The same ability to detect small change drives us nuts on computers. And that's maybe why people are complaining about iOS 11.
I mentioned it in both my iPhone 8 and iPhone 10 review, in that we, as humans, we hate change, but we hate boredom. And it's really hard to balance those two things.
Well, but then again, there's a reason why the design of a hammer hasn't really changed. We've made different kinds of hammers, but we haven't found the need to put an extra kink in the handle. We haven't found a need to change the order of is it a prying device or is it a blunt device first. The thing is, when people are reacting to technologies not as a creative expression but as a tool, they just want that tool to work the way that they expect it to. There's so many different ways we could steer a car, but we have a wheel and a configuration of pedals that's familiar from model to model to model. And it's not because people keep changing cars so often. It's because if you people are not willing to believe your numbers that this new triangular steering wheel is a much better solution. They're wondering why they have to learn something brand new that to them doesn't give them extra features or make anything any simpler, and just simply makes something that they were so familiar with that they could use it in their sleep, almost literally, that why do they have to learn new skills for it? So there's always going to be that balance there. I think that there's in every good production team, there's that person who has to kind of hold the team back, saying, yes, that's a great concept, this triangle. We're definitely going to be putting it in the next concept cars at the Detroit Auto Show, but we are going to only put it into production vehicles after a lot of thinking and a lot of testing.
But I feel like back in the old days when we fought with war hammers, there was a lot more innovation in the hammer space. And now that it's become a tool, we don't worry about the claws or the spikes or stuff so much. And like the phones are still new and exciting and we're working them out. And then 100 years from now, it'll be like, here's your slab. Here's your mother box. Just go to school.
It won't be as much fun then, will it?
No, it happens, but they will have something new. Our transporters are scattering our atoms across the galaxy. Can't we have one that just works, Leo?
Yeah. And nobody's going to catch up. There's always going to be that device that keeps getting improved. But at some point you can only go so fast with a car. You're going to have to switch to an airplane at some point. Doesn't matter how good that car is. Doesn't matter how comfortable that car is. Doesn't matter how efficient that car is. You're not going to get an ocean over an ocean with a car. So that's the other edge of that coin. At what point do you kill your own product? Or do you simply realize that's getting spun up on a new way of doing something is going to be so hard for us internally that we're just going to have to be the last company that makes really great cars?
Yes.
The Apple original content juggernaut continues to march. They've just signed. Oh, I'm really happy to see this, actually. Kumail Nanjiani and Emily V. Gordon, the creators of The Big Sick. And, of course, you know Kumail from Silicon Valley. And Smilf executive producer Lee Eisenberg and Master of None co-creator Alan Yang to make a new series called Little America, a half-hour anthology series based on true stories about immigrants in the U.S. Another scripted series to its line. They got a ton of stuff. There was a great, speaking of great, insightful blog posts, there was a really good one from the Rajam Report. I had never read this before, but I don't know. I linked it in the show notes. I don't know if you, or the rundown, I don't know if you guys got a chance to read it. But he's talking about Apple and the video market. And
he's great.
Have you read his stuff before?
I've met him. We've had coffee at outside Cupertino on several occasions.
Well,
he's really, really smart.
Paying a lot more attention to him. And he's just started a podcast called Rajam Radio. So he sets out in the beginning just to talk about what's going on, the two trends in the U.S. video and TV market. Traditional pay TV is in decline. And when you see the numbers, it's kind of dramatic as more and more people are cutting the cord. Comcast and Dish and DirecTV dropped 872,000 subscribers in Q3 2017. That's a 3.1% year-over-year decline. You can't sustain a 3% decline for very long without going out of business. And then, of course, in the same time, subscription streaming services like Netflix are huge. What I didn't know is how big Hulu is. Netflix has 8 million new streaming subscribers around the world. So it's growing very fast. Hulu has 17 million U.S. subscribers. That's a growth of 40% year over year. Disney's about to start streaming. So in that environment, now he talks about what Apple is up to. And Apple has this real challenge because right up till the moment, it's all based on buying or renting stuff from iTunes, right? They're really not in they're not in this market, and that is also a bad market to be in. Apple's market share for renting and selling movies has been falling for several years. He's quoting Trip Mickle and Ben Fritz in the Journal, tumbling to between 20% and 35%. Used to be as much as half, so now it's 1/5 to 1/3 of the market. And more people are streaming. Obviously, fewer people are renting, and more people are streaming. So in this environment, you kind of understand what Apple's, you know, seeing as a problem and why they're going to go to this original content model that's doing so well for Hulu and Netflix. He also talks about the TV app and quotes Neil I. Patel from The Verge saying the TV app really is the beginning of an entirely new TV home experience. Apple just added news, by the way, the TV app. They have a sports tab. They have Amazon Prime, the only major service.
And the Olympics.
Yeah. The only thing is, I've been watching the Olympics in it. The only major service that's missing is Netflix. The
Netflix
Apple
is holding out. They don't want to surrender control of the interface to Apple just yet.
Yeah. The Apple TV is struggling. It's seeing year-on-year declines. It's not doing well. So that's an – in fact, if you look at it compared to its competition, it's really the weakest of the big four, the Chromecast, Roku, Amazon Fire TV, 21.3 million users in July 2017, according to estimates. Of course, Apple doesn't say – didn't mention Apple TV at all in their quarter earnings release in this most recent quarter, did they?
They only ever mention it when someone asks about it. Otherwise, it gets bundled under other the same category as AirPods.
Yeah. And it's way – part of this is its price. And this is one category where people are very – for some reason, I don't know why. Things like video game consoles and set-top boxes are very price sensitive. The Roku
message has vacillated. Like they announced it's all about the apps. The future of TV is apps. And then the next year it's all about HDR, which is not apps. That's TV content. And you've got to sort of pick one of those and double down on it. And my wish list is still, I love the fact that you can get the Chromecast and you can get the Amazon Fire Stick. And it would be great if you had embedded Apple TV software on your iPhone. And then when you're in the hotel, you just throw the Apple TV Express into the back of the HDMI port. And it's not the same as having a dedicated box, but it helps build out that ecosystem way faster and are much more easily digestible point of entry for people who are used to really cheap set-top boxes.
He quotes John Gruber saying, "What does Apple TV offer to justify costing over twice as much as the other guys?"
The silicon, but people don't care.
Yeah.
Well, but they're not delivering. That silicon isn't delivering features. At least not any features that actually relate to people. And really, it really is going to be about apps. More and more as the time goes by. The FCC just approved a new plan for the next generation of digital television, in which essentially right now you have a digital video stream that is behaving kind of like broadcast television, old-fashioned broadcast television, where you tune into a channel. The new system is going to be more like wireless broadband, where they're broadcasting a sort of like an IP signal, where it's a real two-way data connection between the receiver, the person who's watching, and the transmitter, so that this thing you'll be able to watch on a regular TV, but you can also watch on your phone just as easily without having a special tuner box or a tuner chip built into it. And part of that is that it drives advertisers to now be able to scrape data from people who are watching The Tonight Show just as easily as a cable company can, or just as easily as Netflix can. So it's maybe part of Apple's game is realizing that the box is going to be irrelevant, and that the more important game is to make sure you put development into the TV app, so that no matter where that app lands, if you integrate it, for instance, into Apple Music so that you can run it on any platform, or if they make it an app, God forbid, that can even run on Android TV or Roku, then that's still a win, so long as you get people going there. And the third problem is that with media consolidation, there's more and more rumblings that this idea of Disney selling their movie, licensing their movies to multiple platforms, that's probably entering its sunset phase. There's going to be a locked-in channel where if you want Disney, if you want Pixar, you've got to go to Disney's own streaming service. If you want to get certain sports, you have to go to this locked-in streaming service. I think that's where we're going to be in 3 or 4 years. And although I'm with Gruber, I'm with pretty much everybody else, I'm struggling for reasons to recommend the Apple TV box to anybody. It's possible that they're putting as much effort into it as it needs to get before it becomes an obsolete category, not just an obsolete product.
So Rajam's argument is that Apple, the future of TV for Apple is content, is TV.
Yeah.
Apple TV, the notion that the future is apps just didn't make sense. He says the reality that TVs aren't computers. There are only two use cases that have broad appeal: video consumption, watching TV, and console gaming. And Apple's failed in the console gaming arena. I think we can agree with that. So it's really going to come down to, and this is, what this is really a detailed analysis of what has ended up being clearly Apple's strategy, which is to create exclusive content. So this, that's a great, I think a really great analysis that maybe even the skinny bundle which Apple had talked about for years and never has been able to happen. You know, the locals and some cable stuff on Apple TV. That's it. He says it's for the best this didn't pan out. The decline of the traditional pay TV is not simply about cost. It's the market rejecting the paradigm of linear television. It's an on-demand world. I think I agree with him.
I mean, Microsoft for decades was trying to get the Xbox into the living room, and they're working on IPTV. This is Steve Jobs, that famous interview.
Yeah,
with Wall Street Journal, with Mossberg a long time ago, saying just if you think cell companies are tough to get into dealing with the individual fiefdoms that are TV companies, it is a huge problem. And that's why I think like this decoupling and these change of sources, who would have foreseen Netflix, even when Steve Jobs had that conversation about Mossberg and Hulu and the advent of all of these channels. And now where is Apple going to put all this television that there? We just talked about another new show. Is that going to go in the Apple Music app? Or is, to Andy's point, is that going to be in the TV app? And is the TV app going to take on the life of its own where it's not just an agglomeration of existing services, but adds its own services content in it as well? The same way Apple Music has been displacing iTunes, is the TV app going to be displacing the iTunes movies and TV show stuff? I mean, it's super interesting where this is all going.
Here are the challenges, according to Rajam. One, content development and production are not things Apple's done before. Will these shows even be good? We've seen a couple that aren't. Even if the shows are good, will it be enough to support Apple TV's 100% pricing premium over its competitors? If growing services revenue is a high priority, and I think Apple has shown that it is, well, then do they put this original content on non-Apple platforms? Which is what you were saying, Renee. And how does differentiation between iOS and tvOS factor here? You know, in other words, whither Apple TV is kind of a big question. Apple ultimately has to decide what is more important. Apple TV is a premium hardware product line, Apple's traditional business, or a streaming video service that runs across all of its platforms.
Yeah. What atoms does Apple need in order to get its services onto your television?
Yeah.
That's a fundamental question.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. If that's where they want to be, but I think that's where if the services are important, that's where they need to be.
Yeah, and the great thing about creating original content is that you actually get profits both ways. You get it as an exclusive towards your streaming channel, but also when it comes time to the second run, when it becomes time to put it in the iTunes store as a purchasable $2.99 per episode download, and also the Google Play Store and also the Amazon Video Store, I would assume that Apple owns a percentage of the show, and they will get those revenues. They'll get those revenues, and then everyone who buys those shows are now more inclined to get hooked on it, and then want to sign up for Apple Music just because they want to get the next. They don't want to wait for a year for the next season of One Day at a Time or Game of Thrones or whatever it is that they can't get for free on whatever service they're already subscribing to.
Bad news if you're one of those people who bought Verizon's iPhones because they were unlocked. As of today, they're going to be locked. Now, I always thought that they had to sell them unlocked because of a consent decree with the FCC, so maybe that consent decree has run out. Verizon says, no, it's because we want to prevent criminals from stealing unlocked phones that could be resold or used overseas. It's to combat theft and fraud, says Verizon.
You need net neutrality. They can self-regulate, Leo.
It's clear that Verizon wants to lock you into Verizon. That's why they're doing it.
I was going to say something definitely must have expired, because if they would not have used the "it's for the good of the consumer that we're doing this" unless they were guilty of something. I don't even mean that as a joke. That is such a textbook thing.
So Verizon hasn't yet said how it will unlock, although it's presumed that like AT&T, they'll offer to unlock a smartphone after a certain period. Once your phone's paid, obviously. The locking only made sense in the days when carrier locking was only because the carrier was subsidizing the phone. And they
also for
quite reasonably
phones,
said
I mean,
that they
travel.
Yeah. Well, and I think a lot of companies, if you say I'm going overseas, will do a temporary unlock. But really, if you buy a phone outright, as more and more people do today, you really should be able to put it on any carrier you want to. It's your damn phone. Locking is anti-competitive.
Yeah.
I only ever buy from Apple directly, and I only ever buy unlocked phones.
Well, see, in the U.S., Apple doesn't always sell unlocked phones, right? In Canada, they
don't. I don't understand. Yeah, almost every country in the world, day and date, you get the unlocked version of the phones, except in the U.S., where then, like a month or two later, it's like, yay, the phones are finally unlocked. And
The Verizon used to be the one we'd say, everybody get Verizon. It's got the complete set of radio, CDMA, GSM, and it's unlocked.
Yeah.
But that's not true anymore.
Yeah. Well, if anything else, you will
follow suit.
Yeah. If anything else, this is such a different market than it was 10 years ago. Now, and not only is it very, very easy to switch carriers, but now carriers are actively fighting to get your business. This is why, yes, the unlimited data is largely phony baloney stuff, but at least they care enough about getting your business to at least give you a phony baloney version of unlimited data. Yeah.
At least they care enough about me to lie.
No, I mean, again, I mean, at least there's the principle of you won't necessarily get charged an extra $10 for one more gigabyte of data. You'll just get like Hayes dial-up modem speeds, which for a lot of people at the end of the month is perfectly fine. But that's what I'm talking about. That would have been the idea that AT&T at the time was so desperate to get a hit phone in their hands that they offered unlimited data to everybody who bought an iPhone at that first year. That in itself will tell you how desperate these carriers are to get new subscribers, to get people to pay month after month. They could practically give away these phones for free. Actually, at one point, they practically did. If it meant that you get a new subscriber, paying them $60, $80, $100, $200 a month.
Yeah. I'm surprised locking is still even allowed. I know the FCC in the past has kind of said you have to offer an unlocking, but they've never really seemed to have enforced it.
It's amazing. When I show somebody, I have a second phone that is, that's my international travel phone, has two SIMs on it. But when I explain to them that they'll have a conversation about how do you test phones, I say, I'll just, pop the SIM out of my usual daily driver, pop it into this. Like, you can do that? Like, but what happens when you send the phone back? Then I take the SIM out and it ceases being. But what happens? No, you're still here. It's like I usually have a SIM extractor in my wallet. But so this is the thing that identifies your phone as yours. If you put this in any phone you like that's unlocked, it will work. So you don't have to. People don't understand the technology. People don't understand the freedom they have. It's one thing to have freedom, but freedom is useless without knowledge.
What I really worry about is if now that Apple's selling unlocked iPhones, you want to get one unlocked, obviously. But what I worry about is that you will then register with a carrier and they will somehow lock it. They were doing that, right, for a while with that weird unified SIM that was in the iPad. AT&T would lock it down.
Well, also, when you plug that into iTunes, it could be SIM unlocked based on an EMEA database, which is vexing.
Yeah. Well, we'll watch with interest as this story develops. A Florida man's in the news again. This time, a Florida man says his AirPods blew up while they were in his ears. Jason Colon was working at his local gym when he noticed his right AirPod billowing smoke. When he realized it was billowing out of his ear, he took him out, sat him on the gym machine, went to seek help. When he returned, the right AirPod had burst open and showed flame damage. It was already like this. It was already popped. I didn't see it happen, but I mean, it was already fried. You can see flame damage, Colon said. Fortunately, he'd removed them before he took it out of his ear. Apple says we're investigating. You think this is, that's a small battery in that AirPod, but I guess any lithium-ion battery.
Anytime a lithium-ion product ships, there will be a very small number of devices that suffer catastrophic failure. Sometimes it's due to damage. Sometimes it's damaged before moisture. It even arrives at the customer. Oftentimes, moisture, they drop it, heat, something happens to it. It's the same thing that what made the Galaxy Note 7 unusual, that it had an incredibly high rate of catastrophic failure, unacceptably high rate. But you will always find any popular device that's shipped in the tens of millions, or five million of them, you'll find a few that go off. It's when that number exceeds a few that you have to start worrying.
So nothing to see here.
Probably not. I think if there were a catastrophic problem, I think that's the sort of thing that happens the first 2 months. It becomes absolutely clear this isn't just isolated incidents. Although I will say that I did have to return my first pair after a couple of weeks because I don't know that it was battery swelling, but the case had started to come apart a little bit on one of the earbuds. And I don't think there are many things that could have done that outside of a battery swelling. But again, the numbers don't lie. If it's news that one of these AirPods exploded or caught on fire, then that just means okay, law of averages is catching up to you. If the news story is another pair of AirPods caught fire and exploded, then you have a problem.
Yeah. So we'll watch with interest. And
that would have been distressing. I will let's not acknowledge that. I think you insert in your ear catching fire and popping. That is distressing. So
and I think we should probably.
I hope they give them a replacement pair, even if it's out of warranty.
I think we should probably say, if your AirPods feel warm in your ear, or you do smell smoke, you might want to remove them as quickly as possible.
If smoke is shooting out of your ear, it might not be because you've hit your maximum zone on the treadmill. It's possible that it's something that needs to be addressed.
Chat room is saying, why did he go seek help? Is the gym manager a trained bomb disposal expert? What was he? Help! My AirPods are burning up. Do you care about one more time, let's just for old time's sake. A lot of people right now, I think, are leaving Apple's Steve Jobs Theater because today was the day, right, for the shareholders meeting. Scooter X, our chat mod, is there. I also met somebody else who went. So we'll ask anybody who went to give us a report what the theater looked like and how the Apple Park. This is the last, one of the last drone flyovers, the February drone flyover.
Before the missile batteries are engaged and autonomous.
It's pretty much done, although some landscaping still going in. And because it's winter in California, some of the trees are a little bare. And I'm sure over time this will get more lush and beautiful. There's the Steve Jobs Theater in all its glory. I'm really jealous of the shareholders who got to go there. How big is it, Renee? How many people can sit in there?
Oh, a few thousand. I mean,
it can be that big.
Not the Steve Jobs. It's like the Cube Apple Store. You thought the Cube was the Apple Store, then you go in and you go down the stairs and know that's the Apple Store.
Right.
That part on the top is just like a reception area, and you walk in and then there's these huge stairs. And we saw the blueprints a while ago, but there's a massive structure underneath there, including pod bay doors that close.
So it could be bigger for the shareholder meeting than it would be for, say, the iPhone launch.
I think it's the same. Like I don't know if they it's like there's not a stadium as far as I know. It doesn't go all the way around. It's just front facing, and they have those beautiful leather seats and all of that. So I think it's probably the same capacity. But town hall was like 150 to 250 people. This is in the thousands.
There are a lot of shareholders. Not everybody could get in. There was a lottery.
And one of the shareholders asked for a tour, and Tim Cook said, oh, you know, can't show you what's inside.
Yeah, so sad. Yeah, it's beautiful. Hey, you're getting as close as anybody from the outside is going to get.
Well, they have visitor center set up now. That's open to anybody. You can go there. There's a very, very small Cafe Max that just does coffees and teas and power bars and some like matcha chocolate and stuff like that. And then there's the Apple Park Apple Store, which has the traditional Apple Store stuff, plus the tote bags and some T-shirts.
Was your briefing at the Apple Park?
I think it normally would be, but this was so specific to HomePod that they did it at the Sound Lab. Apple has got the – Apple sort of puts together these little – for HomeKit briefings, they put together these little houses – or not houses, they're sort of – I can't tell because I don't know real estate. But you go into a building and Apple has like a condo or something in the building and they have everything set up in there. Like in a kitchen, here's the HomePod. In the living room, here's the HomePod. And then you can – they're not just sitting across from a table talking to you, but they're giving you demos and showing how it works and discussing how you could use it in different places.
Yeah. Well, it's a beautiful campus. And if you get to see it, you're getting a special treat. And I'd love to hear from any shareholders who went this morning. Let's see it. We'll hear from Scooter X, I'm sure, when he gets back. Let's take a break. When we come back, your picks of the week. You in the mood?
Yes, sir.
Do some homework.
Indeed.
Figure out something to talk about besides the HomePod. Our show today brought to you by Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. If you're getting a new home, you know, very few people can actually bring a briefcase full of cash and buy a new home. Most of us have to get a loan. And, of course, the first thing you say is, well, I'll go to the bank, right? That's where loans come from. Maybe not. Maybe the bank isn't the best place to get the loan. Certainly, it's not the best home loan experience. Now, for that, you've got to go to Quicken Loans. Number one in customer satisfaction, according to J.D. Power, 8 years running, including this most recent year. And rightly so. I mean, these guys really know what they're doing. A big lender, $92 billion in loans. They do a great job. And now they've got this Rocket Mortgage that is perfectly designed for people like us who don't frankly want to go to a bank, don't want to talk to a lender, just want to get the loan out of the way. We don't want to go up into our attic to get paperwork, fax it. I don't even fax it over. Are you kidding me? No, with Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans, you can do the whole thing on your phone in just a matter of minutes. You know, you owe it to yourself to go there and check and see what kind of rate you can get. Basically, you'll answer a few simple questions, do it online, so you can do it on your phone, a tablet, a PC. Stuff you already know in your head. You don't have to go get any paperwork. They'll do all that for you. Their trusted partners allow you to share your financial information with Rocket Mortgage at the touch of a button. And then, based on your income, assets, and credit, Rocket Mortgage can analyze all the options for which you qualify and find the one that's right for you. You pick the down payment. You pick the term, the length of the loan. You pick the rate. This is great for refis, too. There is no better way to apply for a loan than Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. You apply simply, you'll understand fully, and you will mortgage confidently. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/MacBreak. That's rocketmortgage.com/MacBreak. Break. Equal housing lender licensed in all 50 states. NMLSconsumeraccess.org, number 3030. Now's a good time to refi. The rates are going up. And if you're looking at a house, there's no better way to do this than Rocket Mortgage. Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. It's rocketmortgage.com/MacBreak. We thank them so much for making MacBreak Weekly possible. Andy Anatko, let's get a pick from you, Andy.
Let's talk about options for spending $300 to $400 on a smart speaker. In case it's a good time to think about the larger thing. One such option is my pick of the week. It's the Blue satellite headphones.
Oh, I have those. I love those. Yeah.
Yeah. They're not cheap. They're $400. And I only really started seriously looking at them after thinking, okay, well, let's just say that I wanted to have a superior audio experience. I've got a budget between $300 or $400. So these are the first really, 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 really good headphones that I've tried. And boy, do they deliver. These are the first. I re-listened to a whole bunch of old audio that I'm very familiar with, and I was hearing details that I'd never heard before on my home stereo or any of the other speakers or things I've tried. I'm not an audiophile, so obviously this is a brand new experience for me. And so maybe it's not. Maybe your needs for audio are not necessarily have one speaker or a set of speakers in the house. Maybe it is having that listening experience wherever you are in the world. I'm not qualified to talk about the technical aspects of this, except for again, I was in really, really good recordings. Particularly, I was hearing so much more detail, so many layers. You can actually, the difference between really good audio and great audio, I think, is can I actually feel what the room was like when it was being recorded, as opposed to faithfully hearing the notes and hearing the performance. And that's what this is delivering. And this is why I think it's something you should definitely look at if you're thinking about putting $300 or $400 into a consumer device that gives you better audio. It has its own, one of the things it says is that it has its own built-in headphone amplifier. Oftentimes you see people who really, really like music, having a separate headphone amplifier plugged into whatever they're doing. Okay. All I'm saying is that it really does sound really, really good. They're also noise canceling. They're not as, I was comparing them also directly to the Bose noise canceling headphones that cost about $250. I would say that the sound on these Blues is way, way better. Although the noise cancellation on the Bose is better, but not way, way better. This will, on a commuter train, this will knock down ambient noise so that you don't really notice it. With the Bose, I can have somebody talking on the phone three seats away and not even be aware that they're even talking. But so if that's the big deal for you, then okay. These are Bluetooth headphones so that you can plug them into analog audio. You can run them off of Bluetooth for about a day if you're just using it as Bluetooth, about 8 hours if you're using them the built-in headphone app. So it's something to think about. It's once you start thinking that the music that you're listening to is worth a better listening experience, one of those solutions might be something as cool and modern as the HomePod. It might be something as out of left field as having lots of cheaper speakers throughout the house so that your room is being filled. And maybe it will be actually finally for the first time in 15 years having an actual stereo system in your house with decent separate speakers. All these things are possible in a budget like that. Having a set of headphones is not something I would have immediately thought of, but now I think it was silly not to think of this originally. $400, definitely not cheap, but again, if you have the ability to test these out, you might be surprised at how it will change your thinking about where your money should be going.
Yeah, I have to say, we don't mention headphones enough, and good headphones will sound every bit as good as a great stereo system and are less finicky as to placement and the kind of room you have. And it's a great way to get work done and listen. I have a very nice pair of Hi-Fi Man headphones, and there is nothing better. I mean, it really immerses you in the sound.
Yeah. Plus, remember when you have headphones, you can crank these up as loud as you want at 1 or 2 in the morning. Well, maybe don't for health reasons, but
I've done it, and I don't hear anything anymore.
Now that I've moved from a separate house where nobody cares, there's at least a 10 to 20 yard air gap between my speakers and the next living person in America, to a beautiful old building, but there are neighbors. It's like maybe it's 2 a.m. Maybe not the time to play the Rocky Horror Picture Show soundtrack this loud. That's another factor to consider. This will allow you to not even care what other people are doing at this time of day when you're enjoying your music.
Yeah. Mr. Rene Ritchie, your pick of the week.
All right. So my favorite thing about the MacBreak Weekly audience is that they're really forgiving when people like me are super late to realizing how good a product is and get around to picking it. So even if it's like a year or two after the product, like everyone else knew it was a great product, I can still make it a pick without being too judgy judged on the interwebs by it.
I'm not judging.
I appreciate that, Leo. But I'm so all into HomeKit now, and I keep picking HomeKit stuff because it works great. And now that I have my ambient little Siri friend back there, I can just ask for all this different stuff, and it just automatically happens. So I'm gonna steal Andy's Crane Cam 3000 bit for a second. I'm gonna move this over so that we can see the wall over here. Hey Siri, turn wall.
Oh, you got them! Yay!
You don't have. So make it so you can hear it. So there we can. You can sort of see it. So I have a few right now. I'm gonna add a few more, but it's really cool. You can set them to be lights, to be any color. There's patterns you can do, and I know everyone knows this already. I'm the last person to do this, but you can make them look like a fireplace or running water or forests. And it really lets you make cool, like I'm using it because it's a cool set, and I'm using it when I do videos so I can do like different logos and things on the wall. But it's really useful for a variety of situations. I have no lighting in that corner, and I could have put a traditional, like I have lights behind me. I could have done those sort of lights there. But this is really different. It's really exciting. And they've got a little music attachment so that when I play music, it'll dance along with whatever music I'm playing. So now that HomePod's in the area, and I'll say, whatever, play EPMD, it'll start rocking out with the music. And it's so much fun. I think I want to make the Legend of Zelda symbol next, but we'll see. There's bendy ones, so you can put them up walls and onto the ceiling. And there's a new one that's a square that aren't out yet, but are even smaller, and you could actually tile your wall in them. But it's just so creative and so much fun, and I'm really enjoying sort of the fun that you can have with them.
How much was that setup that you've got there?
So I bought it in phases of stupidity. I bought like a one that was full retail just to get started, and that had 9 panels. That was a starter kit. And then Best Buy had a sale over the holidays that was down from $300 to $200 for 15 panels.
Oh, that's
and
good.
The music kit. And you can buy 3 panels for like, and this is all Canadian prices. It's probably like half this US, but you can buy like 3 panels for $40 or $50, and then 9 panels in the starter kit for like $100, $150. And then the 15 panel ones, I think was like $250. So you can really get as many as you want. And you think that 9 is a lot, but after you start playing with them, you start scrounging your pennies saying, if I just had one more row, I could completely make that Hue logo on my wall.
I keep ordering more Hue lights. It's like, I can't stop.
Those are Hue lights behind me, Leo.
Yeah,
those
I like Hue lights too. Yeah, yeah.
I love stuff like this where, and it's true of the HomePods, true of other speakers too, where if you love it, you can keep putting money into it and make it even better. And so, yeah, it's like I've been so tempted by these panels, especially now that I'm in a new place. And I'm thinking that I don't have any art that fits that corner. It's an awkward corner. And I'm thinking I should buy at least 12 nano leafs in a line and just have that be like my Babylon 5 reception area.
I probably shouldn't mention this, but if anybody wanted to buy me a gift, because there's no way I'm buying these. Well, you made me think of this, Andy, because we were talking about headphones, and I have a very nice pair. I think they were $800 or $900 of Hi-Fi Man electrostatic planar headphones, and they sound really fabulous. But then I was looking at the Hi-Fi Man site, and boy, they call it the Shangri-La. It is electrostatic headphones with a tube headphone amp. Now, I should point out that Hi-Fi Man is very high-end, and they already sell a headphone amp headphone set for $18,000. I'm thinking this one, it's going to cost upwards of $20,000. But, you like the HomePod, this might even sound better. This might even sound better. They claim that it goes all the way up to 120 kilohertz, 7 hertz to 120 kilohertz. And I just like the fact that it's got a tube amp because, the fact that somebody's selling this brand new as a product is for headphones. It's not just a tube amp. It looks like there's at least 8 tubes in there. So
talk about a fire hazard on the treadmill. That's it right there.
Do not wear this in the gym, my friends. But it might give new meaning to feel the burn, right? there's Susvara and EF-1000 is $18,000. So I can only imagine what they're going to charge for that new one.
You can literally someone told me a while ago that if you have millions of dollars, you can spend millions of dollars on audio. They will take as much money as you have.
They'll take it all.
System you want.
They will take it all. Every penny you've got. The Shangri-La Hi-Fi Man.com. Fortunately, my ears are not good enough to distinguish between that and, a $50 pair of earbuds, so I'm happy.
Oh, God. Wouldn't that bring people right down to earth if every high-end stereo store had, like, an audiologist saying, okay, guess
no
what?
No point.
You are not.
Point.
Here's a vintage Radio Shack pair of speakers that in itself exceeds your ability to listen to music. $18 used to be my aunt's. Go ahead.
It would only be fair. You may have millions, but your ears, they're worth a nickel. Andy Iannacco's at the Chicago Sun-Times. You can read his blog, CWOB.com, and follow him on the Twitter at IHNATKO. We love having you on every Tuesday. You also have a bunch of other podcasts, including an Android podcast called Material.
So, but it's about Google, not just Android. So it's
okay.
It's also about how Google ruins your life if you're an Apple user, not just a user of other things.
Listen and let Google ruin your life at replay.fm. Thank you, Andy.
Cool, but evil.
Yeah, we really appreciate it. Also, Renee Ritchie, who does such a great job. Read his unreview of the HomePod for every detail. That's how I find out how to use this stuff at imore.com. And his Vector podcast is also a must-listen at imore.com/Vector. Who are you talking to these days? Anybody interesting?
So today, Georgia Dow, mutual friend of Twit and myself, she's on to talk about parental controls and the dangers of screen addiction, and she blew my mind. She's a therapist and an educator and a mother. And then in 2 days, we have Clayton Morris on talking about going iPad only with his new business.
Nice.
Yeah, he's left Fox and he's high on life. It's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, Clayton had a tie on the other day, and he said, I haven't put one of these on in a long time.
Yeah, I know. He's so great. He's just so enthusiastic about technology.
Love him. Thank you, Renee. Thank you, Andy. Thank you all for being here. We do Mac Break Weekly right after iOS today. Usually, we're a little late today, but we made up the time. Usually around 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern time. 1900 UTC. If you'd like to watch live, go to twit.tv/live. If you're live watching the stream, you might as well go in the chat room where there are live people talking about what's going on, irc.twit.tv. You can also join us live in studio as the three guys from New York who just walked in, dude, Todd, Patrick, and Dave. Just email, there they are, email tickets at twit.tv. We'll put a chair out for you. I think you're really here for security now, aren't you? No? Well, you're late for MacBreak Weekly. We're just wrapping it up now. Sorry, guys. If you can't be here live or watch the live stream, you can always go on demand. Like we, as we learned, that's what people really want. They want on demand. We've got audio and video at our website, twit.tv/MBW. You can also find your favorite podcatcher and subscribe there. That way you'll get every episode the minutes it's available. Pocket Cast, Overcast, Apple's podcast app. Or I'm happy to say you can just say, hey, Siri, listen to MacBreak Weekly, and your HomePod will gladly play.
Playing podcast MacBreak Weekly, MP3.
Just for you,
the it's latest episode. It's time for MacBreak Weekly. Andy Yannakos.
That's
here.
Very
Renee
confusing.
Richie's here. We got a great big show for you. Renee.
This is,
Inception,
I'm telling
Leo,
you.
It's MacBreak Inception.
The best thing ever happened to podcasts are these voice-controlled speakers. I mean, yep. It's just fabulous. It's so easy. You could just say, hey, listen to Vector or listen to Material. Sometimes you have to add podcast. Depending on the device, you might have to add additional clauses on the Amazon Echo. Sometimes you have to say on TuneIn, that kind of thing. We are also on the Flash Briefing if you have an Amazon Echo. There's a Twit entry for the Flash Briefing. Please do add us now, not just in the U.S., but also Canada. Yay! Australia, India, and I think I'm one other country that I'm forgetting. You can listen, just go to the Echo app and add us to your Flash Briefing. We do little segments of this show and all of our shows each day, something new and fresh. Are we still doing the survey? Have we wrapped that up yet? I think there's 1 or 2 days left to do the survey. We would appreciate it if you go to twit.tv/survey and take it. It's short, just a few minutes. Once a year, we ask our audience to tell us a little bit about themselves to help us do better programming for you and help our advertisers understand why it's a great thing to advertise on Twit. I promise no personal information will be shared with anybody, even me. So it's really, we take it in aggregate, and I appreciate those of you who've already done it. Thank you. It really helps us once a year. That's all. twit.tv/survey. Thanks for watching, but now I'm sad to say it's time to get back to work because break time is over.